ComingToBook.com.
Hello, once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, November 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here for this Hump Day show. By the way, with it being Hump Day, there's also Hoops Day for Cole Ryan. If you haven't checked out today's edition of Betting the Buckets, make sure that you do that. You can catch that every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday as part of our Bang the Book Radio Network. You can find that over at bangthebook.com on our podcast page, posted every morning bright and early there on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If you're already subscribed to us on iTunes, then you already get that, and I'm sure that you've listened to it already. So make sure you're taking advantage of the great NBA analysis there from Cole Ryan. As far as today's edition of Bang the Book Radio goes, the aforementioned Cole Ryan joined me for yesterday's recording of the Gridiron Gambling Report for Week 13. We talked about the Thursday night football game between the Cowboys and the Vikings. Also talked about three games that really stand out on Sunday. And had a lot of sage advice for you at the top of the segment about handicapping in the month of December. You know, it's a very, very difficult month. I think I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but there's so much going on. You're going to holiday parties. You've got all these bowl games where it's a completely different handicap. You know, the NFL playoff chase is on. You're kind of in the lull of the day-to-day grind of the NHL and the NBA seasons. So there's a lot of stuff that becomes really, really difficult here in the month of December. You start going to holiday parties. You're out Christmas shopping. You know, there's all the headaches. Maybe you work in retail. Maybe you work at a bank, whatever the case may be. You're going to have some bad days at work here this month. So talked about some of that stuff there at the top of that segment. But then to wrap up today's show, I'm going to talk some NHL, also some Major League Baseball. I figured it's just the easiest way to do it here. I was going to try to get Wes Reynolds on the show, but the golf tournament started today. So figure I'll just wrap up the final 15 or so minutes after the Gridiron Gambling Report, and then we'll start looking ahead to Thursday, which, by the way, on Thursday's show, Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com for our weekly Powers Picks segment. Also, we'll hear from Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com at the Ultimate Fighter 24 finale, that coming up at the Palms in Las Vegas this weekend. And I'm going to find us another guest for Thursday's show here. I'm not exactly sure which direction I'm going to go, but I'll find somebody else there to slot in between Brad and Jay Primetown. And then coming up on Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment for Week 13, myself and Cole Ryan coming off of a 4-0-1 week in the Super Contest. Starting to see these games pretty well here over the last several weeks. Finally got the results that we were looking for, so we're hoping to build off of that momentum. Then also on Friday, the odds report with Brent from DSI Sportsbook. He'll tell us where the sharp money is in both the college football and the NFL markets. Of course, conference championship weekend for college football. One other note I wanted to pass along here about the Super Contest. You know, we post the picks and the consensus on Saturdays. I post a recap article every Tuesday over at bangthebook.com. In that recap article, you can see that our bangthebook.com entry with Ryan, our site creator, just a half point out of the money right now with 5 weeks left of NFL selections to make. So that's definitely something that you want to be following along with. Make sure that you're keeping it tuned to bangthebook.com to see his progress there in the Super Contest. I know I've been talking with him about it quite a bit here behind the scenes. In some respects, it's kind of like he's throwing a no-hitter, and I don't want to, you know, get too close to him. I don't want to rub anything off on him, but, you know, very exciting times here for us at bangthebook.com, so hopefully things continue to work out in a positive way. But make sure that you're going on over there to the website, checking out all the great content that we have, all sorts of game previews. I know I've written 7 here for college football this week, a couple NFL, or actually 4 NFL, waiting on the Monday night football game, see if we can get a status update for Andrew Luck, but you know, my situational articles are up over there. We've got previews from myself, from Tom Wilkinson. We got a couple of other writers that have joined us. Doug Carson, of course, writes his NBA picks every day. So tons of stuff over there. You know, take a look around. Maybe you just go and read the articles and check out the podcasts, all that type of thing. Hey, that's fine. Anything that you're doing over there, we're very happy about it. But take a look around. Look at some of our power trends. Look at all the matchup data that we have for these games. Usually you can find those at the top of my previews. So you click on those, you get a look at all the stuff that's in there, you know, lots and lots of trends, statistics, head-to-head comparisons, lots of really informative stuff at bangthebook.com. So it's definitely something you want to take advantage of here, especially if your handicapping time gets cut a little bit short, you know, here during the holiday season. But of course, the big thing over at bangthebook.com are sportsbook reviews. We want to make sure that you know where you can safely deposit your money, where you're going to feel comfortable. DSI Sportsbook, one of those places. If you head on over to DSI, use the promo code BTB Radio. They'll get you a $10 free bet just for signing up and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. The other option, the Bang 200 promo code, 100% for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino. So like I said, you know, maybe you have a bad day at work. You just want to kick back with a few fingers of Glenlivet or something like that and play some virtual blackjack or maybe some roulette. Hey, get some free money out of it by using that DSI Sportsbook promo code. Again, Bang 200 gives you 100% bonus for the live casino as well as 100% for the sportsbook. So those are two really good options available for our Bang the Book radio listeners. And for those that have reached out, thank you so much for all your feedback. We're constantly looking to improve here with the show. If there's any sport you want us to try to cover more, if there's anything you want to tell us about any of our guests, anything like that, please let us know. There's a contact us link over at the website. You can reach out to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods. Reach out to the website on Twitter at Bang the Book. No shortage of ways to get in touch with us. So, while we are constantly striving for improvement here, and we're very, very thankful for all of our listeners. So please, if there's anything you want to reach out and tell us, feel free to let us know. So with that, we'll go ahead and get into the Week 13 Gridiron Gambling Report segment with myself and Cole Ryan. Again, we previewed the Thursday night football between the Dallas Cowboys and Minnesota Vikings, and also three games coming up on Sunday. I know the anticipation's really itching at you here. So without further ado, here's this week's version of the Gridiron Gambling Report. All right, I'm joined now by Cole Ryan for our Week 13 Gridiron Gambling Report segment. Cole, how's it going today, man?
Excellent, my friend, as always. Very excited to talk football. However, this is the time of year when, especially when college football starts winding down, when you can tell we're getting close to that end of the road. So I really want to make the most of every week. So I'm fired up to be here.
Yeah, and as we get here into the month of December with Thursday, of course, being December 1st, and we don't have to worry about weather here in this spot with Minnesota in their new home venue, but if you're not handicapping the weather from this point forward, you're doing yourself a major, major disservice. We've seen some big totals moves, a few side moves here based on the weather over the last few weeks, but Cole, as well as I do, weather's going to dictate a lot of things here in the month of December.
Oh, absolutely. To me, you have to pay attention to weather. And not only that, but all sorts of conditions. To me, wind is the one I really pay attention to. But you're going to have cold temps, you're going to have wind, you're going to have rain, you're going to have snow, so you're going to have slippery conditions or frozen fields, you name it. There's going to be too much to not pay attention to. And I think it kind of adds to certain home field advantages. Every year it seems like Miami comes to Buffalo, and every year at the end of the year in the wintertime, they seem like they have a tough stretch going up there. So it's those kind of things you got to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and it's not even just the weather delays or the weather factors during the game, but also there are weather delays for travel, and that's true of every betting market here at this time of year. So, again, you want to keep all those things in mind. And, Cole, you and I were talking a little bit before we started recording here, trying to discuss what sorts of topics we wanted to discuss at the top of this segment. And, I think we want to talk more in general about the betting markets because, it's late in the season. Players are tired. Teams are tired. You've had some guys or some teams that had bye weeks in week four. You've had some that have had recent bye weeks. Cleveland and Tennessee are on a bye this week. So you've got that factor of teams are really fatigued here at this time of the year. You've got teams perceived to be in must-win spots. And also another thing here about the month of December, college football bowl game lines will come out Sunday night or at the latest Monday morning, and those will be up. They will not change that much except for injuries or a lot of steam on one side or another. So you have to think that the NFL betting market's going to get even tighter. For me, for my money, I think December is the hardest month to handicap the NFL.
Well, because not only with lines, I mean, you brought it up. The lines are hard enough anyway with everything going on, college football and whatnot. But when that starts to dwindle down or the lines get set early to where they completely focus on the NFL, it's definitely going to be harder. But then it's kind of trying to read the tea leaves. Like you said, must-win games could be overinflated, or how about teams that start wrapping up their divisions earlier, start wrapping up playoff spots earlier? Are they going to play their whole complement of players, and do you know about it right away? There's a lot of question marks, and you throw in weather. I mean, when weather affects a total, it hits hard and it hits fast. So if you don't know about it ahead of time, if you're not even paying attention to it ahead of time, you can miss that value based on the line move with weather. So between weather and if teams want to be in a must-win, if teams are going to rest players, playing for their jobs or maybe not? Will players play for coaches with teams with losing records? Will they quote-unquote tank for draft picks? There's so much going on in this month. You really have to be on top of your game if you want to make sure you get value from the Lions.
And I think the hardest part here of being a handicapper, particularly if you're a novice one that does this, you know, largely for fun, or maybe you do take it a little bit more seriously, look to use it as a supplement, but maybe you can't dedicate the time that, you know, a full-time professional handicapper can, or something like that, you know, especially also this time of year, because you're out Christmas shopping and going to holiday parties and all that type of stuff too. I mean, it's just, there's so much going on here, but you want to be able to sort through what is perception and what is reality. You want to be able to look at that situation that's being labeled a must win and ask yourself, is it actually a must win? Is it already built into the line? Or is this just a bunch of ESPN talking heads, you know, putting these nuggets into everybody's brains, or some network, you know, instructed to do that so that they can get better ratings for a game? So all those different things happen here in the sports media industry. So that's also another significant part of the battle here, is sorting through all of that stuff, deciding what's worthwhile, what isn't, and then reacting accordingly.
Well, and those aren't always easy to find. They're not always easy to find. Look, when you're watching any NFL channel, you're going to hear about the Cowboys. Actually, all you're hearing about is contenders right now. So you, NFC talk is going to be about Seattle. It's going to be about Dallas. And again, the AFC, you got the Patriots and the Raiders and, you know, what teams are going to make the wild card. So those are going to be the teams they focus on, which could kind of be tough to get that information you want to get from the lower-ranked teams or the teams that are out of the playoffs and don't have anything to play for. At the same time, you've got to be careful about that bias. And you don't know when it hits or how it hits either. That's the worst part. So, we didn't want to talk about this to scare people. We just wanted to talk about this so they would pay attention, so they know what they were getting into. Because sometimes if you're not doing a lot of research, if you don't know what's going on, and I'll talk about this more when we cover the Saints game this week, then something might be happening that you don't know anything about, and that could actually alter the game and how they approach it.
Yeah, and I think what you want to do here, you know, and Cole, this is something, because you and I have been involved in this industry and have been studying these things for so long, a lot of times we can pick these things out in the betting market. But for some of our listeners, of course, some of our new listeners, maybe you're not as adept at doing that yet. But when you and I were talking here before we started recording, there were a couple of games that we just looked at and went, what the hell's going on with this line? This, you know, something stands out about this line. And you can just find those. You know, the more familiar you get with the betting markets, the more familiar you get with how odds makers are rating teams, which teams are getting steamed week by week, you can start picking up on some of those tendencies. So, you know, again, if you don't have a ton of time to dedicate to this month, and I understand that there's a lot of stuff going on here, you know, just try to watch the betting markets. Look how some of these lines come out against comparable teams the previous week. Factor in those situational spots, because there are a ton of those here this time of year. You know, road back-to-backs become a lot harder, all that type of thing. You know, and just if something looks off, it probably is off. You have to trust some of your intuition and your instincts here at this time of the year. And, you know, again, like Cole said, we're not telling you all this to scare you. We're not trying to overwhelm you with these types of things. It's just that you want to make sure that you're aware of this type of stuff so that you can, you know what you're looking for and make smart investments with your money.
Right. And look, and don't forget the stuff you always know. Like you mentioned, you and I, when we talk about the games, we often will go, why is that line like that? And we kind of compare notes. One of the things that's always consistent in the NFL is overreaction to the last week's games. You know, think about the Green Bay Packers, who were left for dead, and then all of a sudden they win outright. Who wins outright now? Of course, hindsight is 20/20, and it's easy to point that out. But that's kind of the thing that sets the line. And then again, the movement. The movement is another thing you want to catch into. So whether you know somebody it's being steamed, or you're just trying to figure out the public's on it, or you're trying to figure out, look, a lot of times the public will be on one side, and the line will be moving towards the opposite direction. So, and I'm not talking about for the public. I'm not talking against the public. I'm talking for the public. So you're going, wait a minute, why is it moving that way? So once you start practicing, if you will, or put in enough experience or know what you're looking at, it's easier to see. But it just brings back the theory that, man, these NFL lines are sharp, and they're only going to get sharper this time of year.
Well, and that's what I love about this show. You know, we can get a lot of those different perspectives, and that's important. You know, being able to compare notes. I mean, even the best handicappers out there, you know, and even some of the best syndicates that are out there, you know, they have people that they trade notes with, or they have people that work for them. You know, I mean, you talk about a syndicate like Right Angle Sports that everybody knows about. You know, they've had tremendous success. They employ a lot of people all over the place to dig up information for them. They compare notes, you know, with all the people that are there in-house. And then there are other handicappers who compare notes with other professional handicappers. You know, that community feel, something you can really take advantage of here this time of year. Use Twitter to your advantage. Reach out to the guests that we have on the show. Reach out to either one of us. Reach out to the Bang the Book Twitter account, whatever the case may be. If you see something that doesn't make sense to you, don't hesitate to ask, because information is everything. Knowledge is so key. That's why we have the format that we have here for these shows. That's why, you know, we continue to bring you stuff like this as we go throughout all of the different betting markets throughout the year. So with that, let's go ahead and get into some of these games. Maybe we can put some of these examples in practice here. Beginning with Thursday Night Football, the Dallas Cowboys, 3.5-point road favorites at Minnesota. Now, of course, this is a game, if you had looked at this line before the season started, it would look a hell of a lot different. Probably even completely flipped, with Minnesota maybe a 3.5 or 4-point favorite, if not higher, because these two teams in much different places than where they were expected to be. This line here with Dallas laying over a key number yet again, something stands out about this one, doesn't it?
Well, and again, it depends where you come from, and it depends kind of what you read into it. To me, from a team standpoint, look, there's no doubting that the year that Dallas has had, and I'll be honest with you, Minnesota's probably been one of the harder teams for me to handicap. I'll say us, but I'll definitely go with me, because we've been against them when they've won, and we've been on them when they've lost, and then we've had a couple times where we liked them, and we didn't like their spot on Thanksgiving. We said it was an early spot. I'll even cut them a break for that spot, because getting the early game to play on Thanksgiving is not an easy task. Playing on the road on Thursday is not an easy task, never mind making an early start. We mentioned that. But that offense, Minnesota didn't convert a third down until Bradford connected with Patterson late in the third quarter, and they were only 2 of 10 on third down. They weren't getting it done on third down. Plus, they have injuries everywhere, especially on that offensive line. You know I like to look in the trenches. Center Joe Berger was evaluated for concussion. He wasn't clear to return to that game. There was another setback in that game. Jeremiah Sorrells had to be helped off the field. Minnesota started the game without Stephon Diggs, cornerback Terrence Newman, and punt returner Marcus Shields. So they've got injuries everywhere. But the one thing I really want to watch for this game, and I know you have to have your eye on it too, is how Zimmer and his defensive mind attacks this Dallas offense that seems to be running over every team they face.
Yeah, that's definitely the matchup for me. I mean, you know, you look at Dallas this year, and when they have stepped up in class a little bit and played some better defenses, they've done a fair job against them. They've been right around their average in terms of yards per play. That, of course, being Baltimore. You know, we were on the Ravens a couple of weeks ago. That was also the top Super Contest pick. Of course, they wound up losing and not covering. And Dallas played pretty well against the Eagles when they played them earlier in the season. This game's on the road, though, so maybe it's a little bit different. Minnesota is 4-1 at home, so they have played a lot better there in U.S. Bank Stadium, that new venue. And, you know, what's really interesting about this game to me is that I feel like now you actually have a defense that stacks up well against Dallas's offensive line. I don't know if Philadelphia was that good of a matchup, and I think Baltimore's defense is maybe a little bit misleading given the relatively weak schedule that they've played here so far. But for Minnesota, you know, this is what they do. This is what they're built on, is defense. Even if they had Teddy Bridgewater, even if they had Adrian Peterson, this is a team that would be attempting to win games with defense. And you know, for the most part, the games that they've won this year, they've done so by playing defense. I mean, they didn't score an offensive touchdown against the Titans in week one, won that game to kickstart that 5-game winning streak to open up the year. I know that, you know, there aren't a whole lot of people buying Minnesota at this stage of the game. Minnesota's a team that could fall to 500 with a loss here. That would effectively take them out of the NFC playoff chase unless something really fortunate happened. So sure, maybe there's that must-win label put on them and this and that, but I feel like this is a defense that can stand up. I mean, they've given up 4.2 yards per carry, so they have had some issues defending the run at times. But also, I mean, this is a Minnesota team that needs to step up and win one of these games, if for nothing else, to give themselves some belief that they can overcome all this adversity. For Dallas, I mean, they've peaked. They're flying high. They can't really get any higher than they are right now. So is this a game where they go out there and struggle? wouldn't surprise me. It's not a short week because both teams played on Thanksgiving, but it's still unique and a little bit awkward to go out there on the road and play that Thursday night game.
Oh, I agree. We mentioned it. Road teams have a tough time. And the Vikings, I think must win is a bit strong here, but they're definitely in a position where they're one win away from being out or one win away from being back right in that picture, so they can't afford to have too many losses. They're at home. We mentioned how well that offense is playing. It's that offensive line. It's the best in football. I mean, they bullied the Redskins to the point where they scared Gruden into doing onside kicks with 9 minutes left. Crazy. And Prescott, he deserves the credit. We've always talked about it. Let's see him pass. Let's see if he can do it. But 3,000 yards, 18 touchdowns, 2 picks. I mean, he averages 8 yards per pass, completing 68% of his throws. I mean, incredible. Incredible year for him. Incredible year for Ezekiel Elliott, that offensive line. Where their weakness is, no Morris Claiborne on that defensive lineup. They got beat up through the air, especially deep. Quarterback Anthony Brown was exposed in a bad way. They targeted him 11 times for 109 catches, 128 yards and a touchdown. Cousins had almost 500 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. It just seemed like they could move the ball in air through the will. What I think could be a problem for Cowboys is if they face a team that gets up on them early, but that team still has to have a good defense. The good news is the Vikings have a good defense. The bad news is you don't know if you can trust that offense to put up points. Because the Vikings, to me, could play well enough with this offensive line of Dallas to keep this game close. Plus, they've got the situational spot we like at home on a Thursday night with extra rest because they played the Thursday before. So, hopefully, if all people are hands on deck, Stephon Diggs of the world, or anybody else comes back in to help this team, they have a good shot of playing well here. And that's why I think the value is with the Vikings at home, albeit a very tough play because you don't know what Vikings offense is going to show up.
Yeah, I would definitely have to lean Vikings here in this spot. And, you know, I talked about this a little bit last week in the sense that, you know, as we were looking at Dallas, you just don't expect NFL teams to do what Dallas is doing. You don't expect them to rattle off a huge win streak and also be undefeated against the spread while doing it. You know, of course, they wound up losing that game last week, but Washington got in the back door. I mean, almost for all intents and purposes, Dallas had that game covered. They were up 12 late. Washington scored a touchdown within the final 2 minutes to get within the numbers. So, it's not like Dallas played bad or anything, although they gave up a ton of yards, like you said. The thing that's concerning for me about this Minnesota offense is that, you know, they've had to dramatically change things. And kudos to Norv Turner for having the foresight to realize that, you know, what he wants to do offensively wasn't going to work. So he stepped aside. Now, maybe it's because he didn't like the offensive line. Maybe he, you know, just wanted to get out of there. It was not a good environment for him, whatever the case may be. I like to think that he saw the writing on the wall that, you know, I can't turn Sam Bradford, you know, into what this team needs. But Pat Shurmur has a lot of experience with Sam Bradford. So you would think Minnesota would be having a little bit more success. I mean, Bradford's completed 71% of his throws, 12-3 touchdown interception ratio. There's just nothing explosive for Minnesota. And at some point, decent defenses will wind up stopping you. I don't know how decent Dallas's defense is. Their defense has been aided a significant amount by that offense, as we've talked about before. You know, opponents are completing over 70% of their passes on Dallas. I really think Minnesota can win this game, but there are two outcomes that neither one would surprise me. One is Minnesota wins close. The other is Dallas just blows this game out. And, you know, like I said, neither one would really surprise me at all.
I thought you were going to say kudos to North Turner for leaving when he did because the ship was sinking. But you bring up a good point. It's a different offense, and they've had time to tinker it. But with injuries and whatnot, it seems like they haven't had a full lineup in. And you can kind of see when you're reading between the lines, if you will, about Adrian Peterson, they're almost rushing him back. They almost can't wait to get him back in the lineup because they know it brings a different weapon. To me, when you have this offense, it's a good offense for many reasons. Short passes keeps the quarterback safe from getting hit. Bradford was getting murdered early in the year. It also helps on turnovers. They're not turning over the ball, at least from an interception standpoint. So if you can get that going, that's good because then maybe you can stretch the field because the defense tries to cheat. The problem is if you can't get that going, when that defense cheats, they become very effective, and they also become very effective at run stopping. Now, with that being said, I think this is a defense they can take advantage of. I think this is a defense that has to cheat to do well, especially on pass coverage. We saw that. We saw many blown coverages, to include the bomb to DeSean Jackson on Thanksgiving. This is a chance for them to prove that they can score points. I think the defense of the Vikings also puts pressure on the defense of the Cowboys, because if they can get some three and outs, which doesn't happen a lot with this Dallas team, now you've got the Cowboys defense on the field for more time than they usually are, and that could lead to big problems.
Well, as we're talking here, we're recording this on Tuesday evening. The Chris Books, DSI, and Bookmaker have gone down 2-3. There's been enough action on the 3.5 minus 20 to get Minnesota down to plus 3, plus 110. Most of the other shops digging in at 3.5 with extra juice on Minnesota. And the more public books, Bovada and MyBookie, showing 4 here. So obviously they're expecting an influx of Dallas money to come in throughout the week. So this will be a line that you want to watch. There's a decent chance this game winds up being one of those pros versus Joes, so to speak, where the sharp players try to take that line value on Minnesota at the 3.5. The public going to play Dallas almost no matter what here. They're going to play them basically blindly because of what they've been doing. So definitely a line that you want to watch here as we go throughout the week. Let's talk about a really interesting line here for Sunday afternoon. Detroit and New Orleans, couple dome teams here meeting down in the Big Easy at the Superdome. New Orleans up to a 5.5-point favorite here in this spot. This number actually opened 4 at Bookmaker over the weekend. So been pretty one-sided in terms of New Orleans money, but as we know, doesn't really take a whole lot to move from 4 to 5.5.
No, because there's not much room in there. It's in the dead zone. And I think a lot of that has to do with, I want to say, forgiving. But remember, that Lions win was way back on Thanksgiving. And that Saints win, impressive, and it was a big number, albeit against the Rams. But what I was talking about in the intro that led me to focus on this game is the Saints had a vendetta. They were ready to go. They wanted to get after Greg Williams and show him how mad they were for what happened with Bounty Gate and that whole business. And when they had a demanding lead, they were still passing the ball and running trick plays and running up the score. One, I put that in my little notebook for the next time the Saints go visit the Rams. And two, I think that also provides a little letdown, if you will, coming into this week. Now, you're not going to have letdown from NFL from time to time only because they're good. And Drew Brees, to me, I'm surprised he's not mentioned more in the MVP talk, because he's putting up some incredible numbers, and he should be in there with at least Matt Ryan, who I think is probably ahead of him, but he should be mentioned. I mean, if you talk about, if you throw away the ones he threw away, the batted passes, spikes, and pass where he's hit when he threw, 28 of 31 against the Rams. And he's got a good chemistry with Michael Thomas. Quarterback rating with throwing to him, 151.3, which is incredible. The problem is, they have some problems on that offense. Brandon Cooks came out and said he's very unhappy with his role. You can't blame him. He used to be the main target, and now all of a sudden they're not talking about him. He ranks 3rd on the Saints in both receptions per game and targets per game behind Michael Thomas, and Willie Snead. So he's not getting the love. When a player comes out and talks publicly, that means what he said in the locker room is not being heard, or at least he feels that way. I don't think it's going to cause a rift because Drew Brees is a good leader. But it's definitely something you have to keep your eye on. When on the other side, it's the Lions, a team that are not pretty by any stretch. I've watched them a lot this year, the Lions, because I want to go, man, is this really a playoff team? I think they are, and it's not because of the win against the Vikings. It's because it seems like even when they're down, they still believe they can win. And that's why they've had so many fourth quarter comebacks we talked about. And they're doing it lately with defense. So to me, that kind of makes me look twice at this game. I definitely think it'll be an entertaining game, and I definitely think it'll be one that not only will show us who the Lions are, because the Lions go down and win in New Orleans, to me, they start getting a big old spotlight. Well, on the flip side, if the Saints come out and win by 20-30, everybody goes, yep, that's the same old Lions.
I think you brought up a really interesting point there about Brandon Cooks, and maybe this is something where you do try to read between the lines a little bit, where does Drew Brees try to force-feed him the ball to keep him happy? Or does Drew Brees kind of tell him, shut up, kid, I'm going to throw it wherever I want to? And, you know, that's something that I don't know. I don't know enough about the Saints to really make that determination. But what I do know is that when you look at what New Orleans has done here in recent weeks, I mean, what really stands out? You know, they very easily could have lost that game at home to Seattle. They blew out the Rams, who suck. They blew out the 49ers on the road, who are awful. You know, they had close losses to Denver and Carolina. And, you know, obviously, the Denver loss was very unique in the fact that Denver ran back a blocked point after touchdown that should have won them the game. But there's not a whole lot that I really love about New Orleans' body of work here so far this season. On the flip side with Detroit, they've overcome a ton of defensive injuries. Matt Stafford's got it rolling now. They've won 6 of 7. We know what he's capable of under Jim Bob Cooter. I feel like Detroit is a team where there's a buy sign next to them. And I'm kind of getting ready to sell New Orleans a little bit here. We know that New Orleans defense isn't very good. They finally get an offense that can test them in that respect, because no one's really been able to since they played Seattle. And, you know, Seattle Russell Wilson was kind of dealing with some things at that time anyway. So maybe you could put a little bit of an asterisk next to that game. But I like Detroit in this spot. I understand why the number's going the way it is, and we're actually seeing some sixes pop here as we're recording on Tuesday night, 5 dimes going up to 6, a couple others out there as well. I would wait and play back on the Lions here in this game at 6, 6.5 if you can find one, because I think that they're actually a very live dog here in this spot.
Oh, yeah, I'm on board. We talked about the Saints, it's the offense, and we won't disagree. I mean, 14 is at the works, week 13 averaging more than 400 yards per game. The Redskins, the Falcons, the Cowboys, and the Saints, so we know what they're bringing to the table. The Lions, look, they won 6 of 7. That's including 2 against Minnesota and 4 of the wins and come on field goals despite trailing in the fourth quarter of every game this year. That's what I talk about. But to me, it's the defense that's improving. The Lions allowed an average of 25.5 points in their first 6 games, to include giving up 28 points to the Rams. Since then, they've allowed an average of 17 points in the past 5 games, including holding the Redskins to 17 points. Now, the Redskins, who I just mentioned in that stat, are also the second-ranked offense. So if they can slow down the Redskins, they can slow down the Saints. I don't think they're going to stop them. I talk about how their defense has improved, but their defense has been the reason they've won the last 2 games, because their defense has come up in late-game situations. The defense is starting to get confidence. The offense already has a boatload of it. So like you, Detroit is the side I want to be on this week.
Well, we'll move right on here through Sunday afternoon, end of the 4 o'clock range. This is one of those numbers where you and I kind of took a, not even a double take, almost a triple or a quadruple take. That's the New York Giants, who are on the road at Heinz Field against the Pittsburgh Steelers. In fact, right before we started recording, this number kicked up to 7 at 5 dimes. It's 6 everywhere else out there in the market right now. But there is a massive amount of disrespect for what the New York Giants have done here so far this season.
Well, and you know, it's funny, I don't even know what to think of the Giants. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. Obviously, they're winning ball games, and that's all that matters. But they've had a weak schedule. 5 of the last 6 wins have come against losing teams. The Bears, the Browns, the Rams, and those were closer than they should have been. They really have been undefeated since October. So this is kind of where everything comes to, you know, are you real or not when they play against a team like the Steelers, who, truth be told, really haven't impressed me. We've talked about this a lot, too. We know they have a great offense, but their defense is very beatable. I mean, the Giants have 8 wins. They're in a position where I think it is interesting is Peyton Manning was in the Giants quarterback room giving tips on what he's seen from Steelers' defense over the years. And Giants did score 27 points in Week 12, but it's a Browns team. They have the number 31 scoring defense and a New York still failed to reach 300 yards of total offense. So really, it comes down to what you believe in. Do you believe the Giants are a good team, or they're just someone who's been able to take advantage of their schedule? Truth be told, I can't figure that out. I know what Pittsburgh has given me. Their defense, subpar at best, and their offense can put up points. The problem is if they face a team who can play well on defense and keep them at an even level, it could get interesting, which is why the line stood out to me as well.
Yeah, I actually really like the Giants here in this spot. I feel like, you know, I've kind of talked about this with Dallas, and, you know, sometimes we talk about it with some of these other teams that are playing really well. You kind of wait for a team like Dallas to just fall off, or Oakland as well. Oakland's another one of those teams. Now, they haven't been nearly as impressive as the Cowboys have been. We'll talk about Oakland here coming up probably in Friday's Super Contest segment, because they'll be part of our card one way or another. But when it comes to Oakland, you know, you sort of wait for them to fall off. When it comes to Dallas, you wait for them to fall off. When it comes to a team that's chronically underachieving and a team that's been really good in recent years, like the Pittsburgh Steelers, you just have this expectation that all of a sudden they'll flip the switch and go, oh yeah, we should win the AFC North running away. And then what they'll do is they'll rattle off 5 straight wins, go into the playoffs at 11-5, and then wind up being a really dangerous team. And look, you know, I believe they're the team that I took to win the Super Bowl this year. So, you know, I'm certainly keeping that in the back of my mind that it's a possibility that they could do that, but they need to prove it to me. You know, know, they have no explosive plays going on right now, really. They have two carries of 20 or more yards on the season. One of them belongs to Le'Veon Bell. The other belongs to Darius Heyward-Bey. So they're moving the ball methodically with Antonio Brown. He doesn't have a whole lot of help in that passing game. Le'Veon Bell is already the second leading receiver by a very large margin on this team. They're not the same Pittsburgh Steelers to me. I feel like last year was the anomaly for this team. Maybe this is what we come to expect. And I've even looked at some of Roethlisberger's numbers, and you know that 1 year is a massive outlier. And here they're taking on a Giants defense that plays really, really well. Steve Spagnuolo coaches this side of the ball up extremely well. You know, sure, they've played a weak schedule, and that probably contributes to some of their good defensive numbers. But maybe this is just a really good defense because they have a lot of guys that play well within this system. I think they can bottle up Pittsburgh. I don't know if they win the game necessarily, but with where this number is going at 6 and you know, maybe some signs it'll go up to 6.5, I really like the Giants here in this spot, catching that many points. I could be wrong. Maybe this is the week Pittsburgh puts it all together. But again, they need to prove it to me before I believe it, because beating the Browns and the Colts, a Colts team without Andrew Luck, that doesn't prove anything to me.
No, no, it shouldn't. But they didn't even play well in that game. Technically, the Colts were within striking distance the whole time, stopped a couple times on fourth and goal where they could have scored and could have made that game a lot uglier. The thing that concerns me with the Giants is before that winning streak, they suffered consecutive losses to the Redskins, Vikings, Packers. All three of those teams at the time had top 12 rated passers, even Sam Bradford. And they combined to score more than 25 points per game against New York. Roethlisberger, obviously, 99.5 rating, good for eighth in the league. He's thrown 6 scores and no interceptions the last 3 games. But like you, if I was going to take someone, it would probably be the Giants, only because I think what I'm reading, and again, I'm reading between the lines, Big Ben came out this week. First, the good news, he said Sammy Coates looks like he's starting to return to form. He threw a couple deep passes to him. He said they were underthrown, which means he's taking the pressure off Sammy Coates. He's saying, I'm the reason that he couldn't catch those. But he also came out and talked about Antonio Brown and said, we can't have a celebration flag. I don't think that's a bad thing. That's what leaders do. Sometimes he's probably overstepping his boundaries. But that wasn't really what stood out to me. What stood out to me is what Giants coach Ben McAdoo said. He said, it's December football. This is where the real football begins. He makes sure that they know December is when you have to turn it on. He was on a coaching staff that really motivated the Giants to play well on the road. So I think that's important because they have that mindset where they can win anywhere, anytime. And I think that includes this week. Not a strong play as of right now for me, but if there's any way I was going to go on this game, I'd also take the points.
Well, the one other thing I'll add about this game here for the Giants, I mean, you know, the defense has been terrific, and the defense is the reason why they're in the position that they're in. This is an offense that, you know, starting to show some signs of growth and of improvement. I mean, you might get Odell Beckham here against a rookie and Artie Burns. We'll see if that's a matchup that comes to fruition. Even if it doesn't, Sterling Shepard may be able to exploit that as well. But how about Rashad Jennings here? 62 carries in the month of November, 4.1 yards per carry. The Giants are slowly finding a running game. And if they can get that balance, if they can take some of that pressure off the defense, then that's something that's really going to help them here in the month of December. I mean, you think about games at the Meadowlands, you think about, you know, some of these games in some of these other cold weather areas. You know, if you can be balanced, run the football, throw it when you need to, you can have success, particularly in some of these bad weather games. So I like that the Giants seem to be getting it together from an offensive line standpoint. They're helping Eli Manning out. They're helping the defense out. You know, they've had 300-yard games over the last 4 in terms of rushing yards. They had 2 all season up until that point. So this is an offense that's starting to grow a little bit more balance, and I like that, particularly against a Pittsburgh defense that I think, as you adequately put it, is subpar.
Yeah, and look, I love the point you make on the running game. To me, that was the missing ingredient with this team. When the year started, that's the Giants, that is. When the year started, everybody was talking about the Giants' defense has to improve. It has. Not only has it improved, but they're healthy. They're playing good football. So to me, the missing ingredient was always that running game. If they can get that running game, it helps the defense. Not only that, but it opens up the pass, and we know that's the strength of the Giants. Interesting team to me, because I think if they win here against Pittsburgh, which would be a very impressive win to me, they're going to start getting the attention they deserve. Where up to now, they're not getting it because of the schedule that I mentioned.
Well, we got one more game to talk about here. It is Sunday Night Football. Carolina out on the road to take on Seattle and the 12th man up there in the Pacific Northwest. We were against Carolina in the Super Contest last week. Oakland had a 17-point lead going into halftime. Found a way not to cover that game, which was really, really frustrating for us. But we were fading Carolina in what was a terrible spot for Oakland. And the game didn't work out for us, but it really should have. We should have gotten that one. And with Carolina here, back-to-back road games, I talked about it. Ron Rivera came out and said, hey, you know, we need to go 2-0 on this trip. And I said, well, you need to go 1-0 first. They didn't do it. I have a very hard time seeing how they get off the deck here. Number sitting 6.5. There's a few sevens out there at some of the sharper books. This is not a good spot for Carolina at all. But Seattle, what a terrible performance from them last week.
Yeah, they're done. They're done. I like that you brought that up. We talked about they're staying on the West Coast for this trip between Oakland and Seattle, something they've never done before, one. Two, Rivera comes out and says we need to go 2-0. So what? How can their mindset be right now? It can't be that, oh, good, we're still going to have a good road trip. Now it's almost like, oh, we're going to split. Oh, it could be our season's over because that was our chance. So the mindset to me is something to be concerned with, especially because they were down by so much when played incredible the football to get back into that game only to piss it away late has got to be crushing them. So now where do they have to go? Only one of the toughest places to play in football. Not only that, but they're going up against an angry Seattle team that, like, there was nothing going right for them. More importantly, everybody was talking about them being the team that could take down Dallas, and now everybody's wondering what kind of team they're even dealing with. It looked like they're getting healthy at the right time, too, the Seahawks, because several players could return to the lineup for this game. That includes defensive end Michael Bennett, late linebacker Mike Morton, center Justin Britt, plus safety Earl Thomas. They want to get him back as soon as possible. Cornerback Darren Sheed. So they could be getting healthy, and I think that's a big deal for the Panthers, because I think if the Panthers get down early in this game, there's no coming back.
Well, and when you look back to what happened in that Seattle-Tampa Bay game last week, we were on Tampa Bay in the Super Contest, so that one, a relatively easy outright winner for us, which I don't think either one of us was expecting necessarily, but a fiver for Seattle there with a field goal, and then the other 2 points they got was a penalty in the end zone for holding. So they really only scored 3 points in that game. But look at the spot that Seattle is in. They're 7-3-1. They were 7-2-1 coming into last week. They really had nothing to worry about here in the NFC West. And an experienced team like this is not going to bust its ass to get home field advantage in the playoffs. Of course, they may be sitting here thinking they can run the table over the last five, and they very well could. But that game at Lambeau could be tough on December 11th, but Rams at home, Cardinals at home, 49ers on the road. That was just one of those flat spots that happens to teams that get into this situation here during the season. So I fully expect Seattle to bounce back here. You know, a primetime game, chance to really stick it to Carolina because you know that they'd love to do that. Also for Carolina, Ryan Khalil, Geno Gradkowski, both on injured reserve. Carolina's down to a third-string center here. With Seattle possibly getting Michael Bennett back and that great secondary and the terrific pass rush that Seattle has, this is not a good spot at all for Carolina. I mean, this number probably should have opened 7, maybe 7.5, because I would have dared the sharp players. If you want to take Carolina, you go ahead and do it, because otherwise I think it's going to be a steady stream of Seattle money here this week, and this could be one of the bigger losers for the books.
That's what I keep talking about, too, because as of right now, at least in early betting, the consensus was on the Carolina Panthers, yet the money was going in the other direction, which showed you it was more of a money play than a public play. Now, they'll talk about how bad that Seattle offense was against Tampa Bay, and look, I'm not going to say they were good. One field goal, 11 offensive possessions, failed to convert on their first 10 third down opportunities, turned the ball over 3 times. But what I did notice, in the first 10 games, Russell Wilson, 79 yards rushing. In this game, 8 times, 80 yards. His mobility is back. More importantly, Newton's inconsistent. He's not running the ball, probably on purpose because they want to keep him healthy. But he had a pick six. Whenever he was under pressure, he only completed 40% of his passes, passer rating 52.1. Plus, they have big problems on the offensive line. They lost right tackle Darrell Williams. Panthers center Geno Gradkowski also left the game. So Tyler Larson, who never played center in the NFL game, was coming in snapping balls. Ryan Khalil, he was nursing a shoulder injury, so he was around. Backup Geno, like I said, Gradkowski was out, so they had a move starting right guard, Trey Turner to right tackle, and then they had to move them all over the place. And when you mix and match an offensive line and you're putting players in positions they shouldn't play in or haven't played in, it's going to make things difficult. Now you get a Seattle defense at home. You get a noisy crowd that's going to make communication hard. Then you get a team that's maybe given up in Carolina, who, oh, by the way, still don't have Kuechly. I really think this is an ugly game. I think it's a blowout. I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle wins by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think this is a blowout, too. Kelvin Benjamin, temper tantrum during that game against Oakland. Greg Olsen expressing his frustrations after the game. The last thing that you want if you're Carolina is to have your two chief pass-catching options in a mindset like this going up against the Seattle secondary. And this is a spot where Carolina, and the reason that you think it could be a blowout and the reason that I agree is that if Carolina gets down 14-0 or 17-0 early on, what happens with this team? You know, they've been away from home for a week and a half because they spent 2 weeks out here on the road. You know, they got to go back home and play San Diego. You know, I just don't see this team having a whole lot of fight. Now, I could very well be wrong. You know, it's not like I've never been wrong before, but this everything about this spot sets up so well for Seattle. I think you're looking at more like a 3.5-point home field advantage given the situation for Carolina and the fact that it's a Sunday night game. And for these two teams to be about a 3 or 3.5-point spread on a neutral field is ludicrous to me. So I think there's a lot of value here in the Seahawks. And I think it's going to be a spoiler alert, but this one's probably going to make it onto the card Friday.
Yeah, we had talked about that before, and all we had to do was figure out the injury situation, which, of course, we'll still monitor. But the only weakness for Seattle, in my opinion, is that offensive line. I mean, he was sacked 6 times, 11 more Russell Wilson. But 17 of 33, 151 yards, and a pair of interceptions. He really had a bad game. But what I like, if you listen to this team after the game, after Pete Carroll talked to them, they all came out on the same page. They all came out, don't panic, we've been here before. And this is a team coming off one of their worst games. They're not going to put back-to-back games like that together. And if you want to help on offensive line, pass block and protect the quarterback, it's real simple. Run up the score. If you get a big score, you can mix in the run. It's harder to predict when they're going to pass, and that's going to take a lot of pressure off Russell Wilson. I really think he's going to be able to run the ball. I think they're going to be able to expose the middle of the field. Linebacker A.J. Klein, he took over for Kuechly. He was horrible against the pass. Targeted 9 times, allowed 6 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown. They're going to tear up the middle of the field. If you can rip up the middle of the field, then you're going to be able to hit those deep passes too, or more importantly, open up running lanes, not only for the running back, but for Wilson. X's and O's don't work. The travel situation doesn't work. The injuries don't work right now. Just everything right now in Seattle's favor.
Well, a lot of strong thoughts here from us. And, you know, last week we really liked the card. You and I in our back and forth, we had a lot of games that we liked. It was just a matter of trying to put them together for the Super Contest. Wind up going 4-0-1, and some of the plays that we left off the card came through really nicely as well. And it's setting up a similar way here this week. Hopefully, you know, knock on wood, I didn't, shoot ourselves in the foot there with that comment. But a lot of things that we like here on this week's NFL card. So we'll have more coming your way on Friday in our Westgate Super Contest selection segment. But, Cole, any final thoughts from you?
Betting the Buckets is back. Make sure you tune in. I got another one coming up for Wednesday. And I'm excited about this week in football. I'm excited about us getting back on the winning streak. Again, not to pile on your jinx, and I'm looking forward to this week.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you again on Friday.
See you, bro.
Well, there you have it. Our Week 13 Gridiron Gambling Report segment with myself and Cole Ryan. Probably ended up teasing at least one of our Super Contest plays during that segment there at the end with Seattle. The spot just sets up so well for the Seahawks and for Carolina. Really have to wonder about the mindset of that team. But you can hear our Super Contest thoughts coming up here on Friday's show. As I mentioned, 4-0-1 last week, up to 28-31-1 on the season. Obviously not where we want it to be, but we're making that push. Hopefully we can finish the year over 500 and, you know, at least take a little bit of pride in that. But the mini contest coming up here, weeks 15, 16, and 17. So those that have been dormant in the tournament, you know, they're actually going to come back and start making selections again. And of course, as we run down the stretch here, you know, obviously there's a lot on the line, and you know, as I mentioned, a lot on the line for our other bangthebook.com entry. And again, you can read about that every week over at the website. So I want to spend a couple of minutes here talking NHL, also a little bit of Major League Baseball stuff. We'll start with the NHL. We've got 3 games on the docket tonight, a lot more on the docket tomorrow night. A couple of general long-term things I want to mention here before I look specifically at some of these upcoming games. One of them is that the month of December has a very condensed schedule because what you get is you get a league-wide break for the Christmas holiday. I believe Christmas Eve and Christmas Day The NHL has both of those days off. So you have the schedule makers really wanting to load up the front of the schedule here in the month of December. Also, in January, you've got the All-Star break. So there's 4 or 5 days off for that, something like that. Plus, this is a season that was already condensed because it started a week late from the World Cup of Hockey. So as that segment with Cole was playing there, I actually went and looked at the New York Rangers schedule, and they play 12 games in 23 days here to start out the month of December. There are probably a lot of other teams that are doing that. So situational handicapping going to be very, very important. I write that article up usually every Sunday. This week it was Monday since I was coming back from South Carolina. But definitely rely heavily on that situational handicapping. That is unquestionably something that you can use here during the month of December, because you've got, you know, teams playing lots of road back-to-backs, road 3 and 4s, all that type of stuff, because you've got those 2 days off. So, you know, the NHL schedule really, really going to tighten up here. Only 3 games on the Wednesday night card, though. Pittsburgh and the Islanders. I previewed this game over at bangthebook.com, so if you want to check out my thoughts on that one, feel free to head over there. Because the other 2 games, Toronto and Calgary, both showing up in my situational betting piece this week. And for Toronto here, this becomes a really tough spot for them against Calgary. Calgary, a team I had high hopes for coming into the season. So far, they've been a massive letdown for me, really because of everything. Now, you know, their team shooting percentage, only 7.9%, tied for 23rd in the NHL. Their team save percentage of .895, among the bottom three or four teams here in the NHL. So they're not stopping enough pucks. They're not putting enough pucks in the net. They're minus 20 in goal differential right now, but they're hanging on. They're 10-13-2. So, you know, from a Pythagorean win-loss standpoint, they should be doing a lot worse than they are, but they've been able to hang in there even with the injury to Johnny Gaudreau. But this becomes a spot that sets up really well for Carolina here tonight. You had a high-octane game last night between Toronto and Edmonton. A game I also previewed over at bangthebook.com. Said I liked the over, and that one came through 4-2. But there was a ton of young talent on the ice in that game. You had Connor McDavid. You had Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews. You had Leon Draisaitl. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins can still be considered a young guy. William Nylander for Toronto. All kinds of young talent. All those guys played against each other in juniors and in international competitions. So that was a game that Toronto absolutely, unquestionably had circled. And Edmonton's struggling right now, and Toronto took advantage of it. And you got to give them a lot of credit for that. So now they have to play Calgary in this Alberta back-to-back. You go from the new Rogers Arena at Edmonton to the, you know, I don't want to say archaic, but the historical Saddle Dome there in Calgary. You know, a lot more, I guess I'll say, intimate of a venue. You know, but the facilities aren't going to be nearly as nice. It's a back-to-back coming off of a big road win. Toronto doesn't get a whole lot of road wins. This is not a good spot for the Maple Leafs at all. We saw some initial line movement come in on Toronto, though, in this spot. This number sitting really Calgary minus 110, minus 115 out there. I think if you're looking for an NHL play to make tonight, if you're looking for something to follow, you know, on a busy NBA card, I think Calgary is the side that you look at here in this game. They're coming home off of a long road trip. That's usually a fade spot for a team, but they're catching a team in a back-to-back coming off of a really emotional victory for them. I have to think that Calgary, you know, comes to play here in this spot tonight. And, you know, they have been playing a little bit better here, particularly with Chad Johnson in net. Brian Elliott, I talked about the big save percentage upgrade for Calgary. Hasn't worked out. Johnson's played very, very well. He's playing with a lot of confidence right now. When you get a goaltender that hasn't really experienced a ton of success and he starts playing really well, everybody feeds off of it. You know, because everyone pulls for a guy like that. Chad Johnson, not that he's an old guy per se, but he's kind of a journeyman. He's mostly been a backup or an AHL starter everywhere he's been. You know, teams root for guys like that. Teams appreciate guys that are really tenacious. For Calgary, I think this, you know, this could be the start of a little bit of a run for them if some of their statistics do rest to the mean a little bit. And look, as I've talked about, shooting percentage for offenses and save percentages for goaltenders. Those are things that you can use to your favor in NHL handicapping. For Calgary, they're 1% below league average in shooting percentage, and they're well below league average, 17 points below league average in team save percentage. So, you know, looking at those two statistics, you're looking for positive regression. Calgary's in line for both of them. The other game here that's in the situational piece for tonight, San Jose and Los Angeles. A short trip, standalone road game for San Jose, but these two teams do not like each other at all whatsoever. San Jose knocked the Kings out of the playoffs last year after the Kings had done it to the Sharks several seasons prior to that. And the Sharks were a team built by the front office to beat the Los Angeles Kings. That's exactly what they wanted to do. It's exactly what they wanted to achieve, and they did it. So now you've got, I think regular season revenge angles are a little bit overblown. You basically have Los Angeles here as your standard issue 20-cent home favorite with a minus 130 line. You figure both teams at a money line pick them, minus 110, 20 to 25 cents for home ice advantage. Boom, there's your line. Well, when I look at this game here, you know, I think that this is going to be a low-scoring affair. There's a ton of familiarity between these two teams. The Kings have played a lot of low-scoring games here so far this season. And for San Jose, while they are 13-9-1, and they've played pretty well in the year, just a 7.5% shooting percentage. So they're having some issues scoring some goals. That's really the last thing you want when you take on the Kings. So I think if you play the under here in this spot tonight, I think that's something that could really play out in your favor. A couple other things I want to mention here from an NHL standpoint, and one of these pertains to Thursday night game. The Florida Panthers take on the Detroit Red Wings. And for Florida here, 11-10-2 on the season, disappointing start for them. They've had a ton of injury problems here early in the year. Nick Bjugstad's out or was out for a while. Jonathan Huberdeau was out for a while. You know, this was a team that they weren't working with a full complement of players. And then they fire a player's coach in Gerard Gallant. And it was a move that was not well received around the league. I can't imagine it was a move that was well received, you know, by the players in that locker room. But they rallied. I'll give them credit for that. There's a lot of character on this team because they came out and played a really strong game against the Chicago Blackhawks. I was surprised to see that. I really felt like, and I wrote about this in my situational piece, that, you know, Florida was maybe a puck line fade in that game there against Chicago. But they actually outshot the Blackhawks, outhit the Blackhawks, wound up losing the game in a shootout. But I was really impressed with Florida's effort level there in that game. But now they have to bounce back. They have to go and play at Joe Louis Arena, which, by the way, when Gerard Gallant was a player with the Detroit Red Wings in the 90s, this is where he had his best seasons. I don't know if maybe there's a little bit of nostalgia that comes into it for Florida. Maybe they get a little bit bummed that, you know, they're missing their leader there and general manager Tom Rowe, the interim head coach, reportedly for the rest of the season. We'll see if Florida makes a move earlier than that. But a lot of times these players don't necessarily respect these front office members that come down and coach. You know, we kind of saw it a little bit in baseball with, ironically enough, the Miami Marlins, who brought down Dan Jennings from the general manager's office to take over for Mike Redmond. And just sometimes it doesn't work out. It's a really uncomfortable dynamic because the players don't really feel like, you know, this guy is one of us. So we'll see how that whole situation plays out, but I'll be watching the Florida Panthers here closely. I give them a ton of credit for the big effort that they had against Chicago, but I don't know if they can come back with that same effort here against Detroit. Now, obviously, lines aren't out for Thursday's NHL action as of yet, but I would look at Detroit, and this is a Detroit team that I'm not high on at all. In fact, I don't really think much of them whatsoever here. I think that their playoff streak's going to come to an end this season, but this is a spot that feels like it sets up pretty well for them because Florida put so much into that game against Chicago. And, you know, it's easy to get up to play Chicago. I mean, they're a great team. They've been a great team for a long time. This sort of feels like a little bit of a flat spot here for the Florida Panthers. One other game I want to mention for Thursday night, and then I'll talk about a couple of teams I'm looking for some regression from, whether that's positive or negative. Columbus takes on Colorado on Thursday night. Columbus, a huge, resounding win over Tampa Bay before they hit the road. What's intriguing about this game is that Colorado's head coach, Jared Bednar, was the head coach of the Lake Erie Monsters, who won the Calder Cup last year. They, of course, are Columbus's top affiliate in the minor leagues. So you would have to think here that there's going to be a lot of familiarity between both of these guys. You know, John Tortorella knows what Jared Bednar ran with Lake Erie in the AHL. And Jared Bednar, of course, knows what Columbus wants to run at the NHL level with Tortorella. A lot of similarities. Usually, you know, those teams try to sort of mirror each other's game plan so that the players are ready to step in if needed. But in this particular spot here, you've got a Columbus team that, in my mind, is getting way, way overrated at this point. They're 12-5-4. Kudos to them for that. But they're second in the NHL in team shooting percentage, second in save percentage as well. And, you know, this is not that good of a team. I mean, they could very well be a playoff team. That's certainly a possibility. But their goal differential of plus 19 is largely aided by some big-time blowouts. They had a 10-0 win over Montreal. They had an 8-4 win over St. Louis. You know, they blew out Tampa Bay the other night. Those things are outliers. And they can really skew some numbers here, particularly with the sample sizes that we're talking about. I mean, look, this is a Blue Jackets team, 115 combined goals in their 21 games. So just 5.5 goals per game in their matchups. But everyone's looking at this team, you know, as being this offensive juggernaut and this defensive stalwart. And I don't buy it. I don't buy it at all. I think this team still has defensive issues. I think this team is, you know, largely living off of some fortuitous bounces up front. They're a team that I look for regression from. Now, does it happen against Colorado? I don't know, because Colorado has a lot of injury issues right now. Gabriel Landeskog's been in and out of the lineup. Matt Duchene, same thing for him. It's been a tough start for Jared Bednar's team, and I give him credit, because to have a 9-11-1 record at this point, pretty good for the way that things have gone for them. But Columbus is definitely a team that I'll be watching very closely here over the next few weeks. And again, trying to find those spots where we can look to go against them. A couple of interesting things to point out here before I flip over to the MLB side. The New Jersey Devils have not lost in regulation at home this year. They are 7-0-2 on home ice, but they are 3-7-3 away from home. So what do you take from that? Well, a few things. For one thing, the Devils can't score. They have 55 goals in 22 games. This is a continuation of last year where they couldn't score. Also, Taylor Hall's out of the lineup now. Taylor Hall was a guy they got for Adam Larson from Edmonton. Really high upside offensive player. Without him, they don't have anybody that can put the puck in the net. So the reason they've played well at home is they get the matchups that they want. They're able to match up well. Corey Schneider, of course, feels comfortable on his home rink, knows the angles, knows the bounces, all of that, because the margin for error is very, very thin for this New Jersey team. And I like what John Hines is doing, and John Hines may ultimately end up being an Olympics head coach because he's one of the hottest coaching prospects among American-born coaches. But that's why they struggle so much on the road. They don't have that margin for error on the road. They don't have those little advantages afforded to you by being the home team. So for New Jersey here, I think this is a trend that you can look to continue, where you can back them at home, fade them on the road. Of course, that home record is going to level out a little bit because 7-0-2 just isn't sustainable. But I feel like this is a team, you know, where you can, not blindly, I wouldn't say, but in a lot of situations, you'll look to back them at home and then fade them on the road. Another team in that same boat right now is the Nashville Predators. 8-1-1 on the year at home, 3-7-2 on the road. Now, Nashville's a tricky situation because, you know, the only other pro football, or the only other pro team there, the Tennessee Titans, it's a little bit different in terms of situational handicapping with these nightly sports. Nashville is a great place. I've been there several times. Absolutely love it. I'd recommend it to anybody that hasn't been there. And it's so easy for the players to go out because the arena, Bridgestone Arena, is right there on Broadway. So players kind of bounce around a little bit, probably after practice, or skate around, go check some stuff out. You know, maybe if they've got an off day to spend in Nashville, they go out and have some fun. You know, that contributes to it a little bit. Also, Nashville is a great home ice advantage because they pack the building. Like I said, it's down there, you know, in that Broadway district where there's a lot of bars and honky tonks and all that. Great home ice advantage. So this is a trend that we could see continue as well. And we've actually seen, you know, several of these Western Conference teams playing very well at home and struggling on the road. Some of that has to do with the fact that they've gone and played East Coast swings already. And some of these Eastern Conference teams haven't even gone out there yet. So keep those things in mind. You want to look at all those travel situations here at this time of the year. But as far as a team that I think could be on the rise here a little bit in the near future, I'm going to go ahead and say that when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think this is a team that really hasn't come close to its peak yet. They're 13-6-3 on the season, so they're playing very well. They're in second in the Metropolitan Division, but they're right around league average in shooting percentage. They're at 8.6%, league average 8.9%. They're without Sidney Crosby for a little bit, and that's obviously going to hurt you know, because he's a great player, as much as I don't like him. But this is an experienced Pittsburgh team. It's one of the oldest in the league. You know, to be just +1 in goal differential right now is very, very surprising. They're not killing penalties. That'll change. They have a lot of great role players. Those guys will get it together. Also, Marc-Andre Fleury has been terrible this year. Matt Murray has come back, and he's really shined, played extremely well. To me, Pittsburgh is a team, and it's tough because they're very public. So, you know, they're going to lay heavy prices as a favorite. But to me, I think they're a team ready to go on a big-time run. I think that's something that we could see very, very soon here. You know, and of course, it's a game that I mentioned here tonight as they take on the New York Islanders. Another team I think could fall off the pace a little bit here. You know, I already talked about Columbus. I have to think, in looking at the way that things are going here so far, that the St. Louis Blues cannot keep this up. 13-7-3 on the season, but they have a negative goal differential. They're -1 in goal differential, despite being in second place in the Western Conference Central Division standings. Really, in the Western Conference overall. They are 10-1-2 at home. So they've played 13 home games against 10 on the road. They're 3-6-1 on the road. This is a team I wasn't too impressed with coming into the year. They had a key loss with David Backes. I think Jake Allen is equal or slightly below Brian Elliott, but they don't have that goaltending tandem anymore to rely on. So St. Louis is a team I think that you can sell stock in them and probably turn a nice little profit here, you know, in the coming days. Make sure you're checking out that situational betting article, also my NHL previews, and we'll see, you know, once I get all the bowl game previews written and all that, maybe we'll add a little bit more NHL content over there at bangthebook.com. I wanted to touch on baseball for our regular listeners. You know that I'm a huge baseball fan, a diehard Cleveland Indians fan. It's been rough for me over the last 4 weeks or so. You know, it's been, I've tried to distance myself from baseball as much as possible because the end of this year just took so much out of me. It's time to get back into it. And that's because there is a lot going on in the world of baseball. Now, for one thing, they're working on a new CBA. That labor deal, actually, the deadline is tonight at midnight. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, I think that there's progress and they'll keep talks going through the deadline. But pay attention to what may change. You know, teams are talking about changing the qualifying offer. That's going to really dictate a lot of things here in the coming off seasons. Looking at probably some pace of play changes, all that type of stuff. Pay attention to it. You don't have to pay close attention to it necessarily because it doesn't really impact the futures market for this offseason. But for future off seasons, it certainly will. So, you know, just pay a token amount of attention to it. But the big thing that I wanted to talk about here today, winter meetings are coming up. Winter meetings actually start next week, next Monday. And, you know, winter meetings are always a really unique thing because GMs get together, players get together. A lot of media members are out there. People looking for jobs are out there. And a lot of discussions take place. And there's been a lot of smoke and fire on the hot stove here already. You know, we saw Yoenis Cespedes reach a new contract with the Mets. The Brewers DFA'd Chris Carter to pick up Eric Timms, who had been playing in the Korean Baseball League. There have been some moves. There have been a few trades here recently. The Segura deal between Arizona and Seattle. You know, there have been some moves. The Cubs signed John Jay, which is a good under-the-radar move. There have been some of those. Nothing that's really moved the futures market too much. But there are some big names out there in the trade market because the free agent market is terrible this season. And really, if you look at it, and this is something that's becoming a problem in a lot of sports here, the free agent markets are bad in most of the professional leagues because teams have realized that, you know, we need to sign these young players, whether it's a bridge deal in the NHL or, you know, locking up a pre-arbitration guy in Major League Baseball. Teams get it. You know, teams understand we have to hold on to our own talent because free agent prices are just through the roof. They're absurd. So free agency is not good. But the trade market is. You've got guys on the market like a Chris Sale, like a Jose Quintana. You know, I've seen a lot of different things, a lot of different names thrown about. You know, could the Arizona Diamondbacks move AJ Pollock? You know, would it's just kind of all over the place. But with winter meetings coming up, now may be the time to strike on some of these futures prices because what's going to happen is if you get, let's say, a Chris Sale gets dealt to Houston. Well, the Astros go from 12-1 to 8-1, maybe. maybe 10-1. Maybe that's a, you know, a more conservative estimate. But if Houston goes out there and gets Chris Sale, maybe they give up an Alex Bregman or something like that to get him, their futures prices are going to change dramatically. I think one team that you may want to consider hitting right now, and it pains me to say this because they were a team I could not figure out at all last year, is the Texas Rangers at 16-1. The Texas Rangers have the farm system it takes to make a big splash and get one of these huge players in the trade market. If they got a Chris Sale, for example, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but they have what they need to get in order to get him. You would have Chris Sale, Cole Hamels, and Yu Darvish at the front of that rotation. Now, obviously the hard part is getting to the playoffs, but who the hell would want to face those three in a playoff series? Absolutely nobody. So let's say Texas goes and gets a Jose Quintana instead. You know, maybe they don't break the bank for a Chris Sale. They're going down from 16 to probably 14, maybe 12-1. You know, it's really a two-horse race out there in the West, so 12-1 would probably make some sense. That's a team that you may want to consider. That's a team that you may want to look at here. And look, you know, there are some other teams. I mean, what's a landing spot for Edwin Encarnacion? Edwin Encarnacion is a game-changing type of player. You know, if he winds up at a pseudo-contender type team, you know, what happens with those numbers? So that's what you want to do. You want to look for these spots where teams have availability, where teams have openings, and most importantly, where they have the minor league systems to make some of these trades. And if you find some of them, now is the time to strike in the futures market because those numbers are not going to be there for very long if a big deal happens at the winter meetings. Maybe nothing happens at the winter meetings. You know, it's all contingent right now on what goes on with these CBA negotiations because some of these new provisions are going to limit what teams can do if they are acquiring a player with 1 or 2 years of control. You know, it used to be, well, if we trade for this guy, you know, worst comes to worst, we can sell him at the deadline if we're out of it, or we'll get that compensation pick. A compensation pick may not be there anymore. So maybe some of these more complacent front offices won't make moves, won't make decisions like that. Other ones are going to say the hell with it. The iron is hot. Let's strike. So, you know, I think that there are a few teams out there that do present some value, Texas being one of them. I still think the Indians at 10-1 is a great price because I don't see anybody challenging them for the division. Maybe the Tigers, maybe take the Tigers at 28-1 if the Indians have a lot of injury issues. But the Tigers are looking to sell right now. So, you know, it's hard to take a position on a team like that with the way that things currently stand. But there are teams that go out there and do things. The San Francisco Giants do something almost every offseason. At 14-1, if they push the right buttons, if they make the right deal, that's a good look right there. Because I don't know if you're going to see a 14-1, you know, if they make a transaction that has an impact. So, you know, we talked about it with Sports Cheetah earlier in the week, with what the value is in playing the futures market. With Major League Baseball, it's a little bit tougher because, you know, you get that series format. You don't have the one-game format like you do for college basketball. But I think there are some values out there. And if you want to try to hit those now, now is probably the right time to do it. Coming up on our Thursday show, we'll have our Powers Pick segment with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. And then we'll also have Jay Primetown of MMAOddsBreaker.com. And I'll find us another guest for our Thursday show there. So make sure that you tune in for that. Well, that'll do it for us today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.